So thank you for coming. And I just went to hear Rona speak. I don't know who you all speak. And she was amazing. I mean, JFI has been incredible. The only reason I found out about JFI is because Bronwyn asked me to speak. And it was the first time I ever spoke. And we were just friends. And then from that time, I was asked again and again and again and again from different groups and different people. And now I have a publishing company waiting for a book for me to publish. And it's just grown. And the reason it grew is because I love my child. And that's the reason I'm here. And I'm just going to share with you a very heartwarming, incredible story, which is a little sad at times. But my son, I don't know if you know, I have a son who's 7 now, thank God. But when he was born with a disease called Canavan disease, which is a neurodegenerative disease that attacks the central nervous system. So Jacob isn't able to walk or talk or see or eat. He feeds from a tube. And we're just living every day and watching this beautiful boy thrive when he's not even supposed to be alive. So it's, and because of him, we started a charity, which is just growing and growing. And he's just taught me so many lessons that I'm here to share them with you. So thanks for coming. It's actually ironic because since I started speaking, more difficult things have happened in my life. And I'm constantly, and even last night something happened, and what am I speaking for? I'm just trying to cope myself. What am I doing talking to other people? So really the best way to preach what you practice is when you're forced to practice what you preach every day. And I'm really learning from, I guess, 7 tricks that I've had to learn over the last few years. So I'm going to share those with you. So people who know me and know about my daily life, I have 3 children, Jacob, Beverly, who's 5, and Ben, who's 2. I teach at Eitz Chaim School. I teach grade 4. And I told you I run a charity, and now I'm speaking. So a little busy, but anyone who knows about my daily life always says, Ellen, why are you smiling? Like, how do you do it? How do you go to work every day and take care of your family and do what you do happily? And usually my joke is to say that I have a great nanny, because I do, but she's gone now, so I don't have that, and I'm still smiling. So I guess the first part is because I have a great, incredible family and friends. We have a support network like no one else, and thank God I have that. And and I have a great husband who takes turn with me. We literally take turns every night getting up with the kids, because Jacob gets up every single night, and he's usually up for an hour or two. And we wouldn't be able to cope. So we do take turns. It's not great for the sex life, but anyway, you know, it's a whole other, we are coping, and we're loving each other, and things are working. So cheers. Okay, this is being taped. Sorry about that one. Okay, so all these incredible people really help with the physical side of things. But the emotional side of things is just a whole new ballgame. It's really different. So to me, it's how you look at things. So you can take a situation, any situation, and you could let it stir up inside you till it pretty much destroys you. Or you can take a positive approach. And to me, there's just no other option. So I just want to share one light, wonderful story about my 2-year-old, Beverly. She's now 5. When she was 2, she taught me this lesson about thinking about things and making it positive. Now, when Beverly was born, she had, hi, come on in, come join us. Oh, I'm not Sarah Hannah Radcliffe. She's amazing, but thank you. She's not here. No. When Beverly was born, she was born with a massive hemangioma. You know what that is? You know, it was a strawberry birthmark, and hers was about the size of a toonie. So it was that big, right on her forehead, and she didn't have any hair. Okay, so, and it jutted out about an inch, and it was bright red. Do you remember, Andrew? You knew her when she was little. It was huge. Okay, everywhere I went, people would stare at her. I'd be walking on Eglinton Avenue, and I'd have Jacob, he was four at the time, and he'd be lying in his wagon, which is on its own. A four-year-old lying down in a wagon is a little different. And then Beverly sitting in the caboose with her big strawberry, and people would just stop in their tracks, and they'd look at her, and they'd look at him, and they'd look at her, and they'd look at him, and then you know what they'd do? They'd just go, like, you know, you poor, poor woman. And you all know that tilt, that, you know, when something terrible happens to you, that, oh, sorry. And you know what she used to do? She used to give them the biggest smile. And then, you know, just put everyone at ease. People actually, adults and children, would actually come up to her and go, ew, what's that? You know, she would just look at them. And she'd just say, it's my strawberry, and it's very, very pretty. She loved it. She thought it was the most beautiful thing in the entire world. She'd go playing in the park, and at the beginning, kids would go up to her and, ooh. By the end of the play date at the park, strange kids would be coming up to me, where do I get a strawberry? It's so cool. I mean, it was amazing. You know, we did remove it when she turned four, because we were just a little worried that at 16, she may not love that strawberry so much. So 6 months after her surgery, we bumped into her surgeon, and she was staring at him. And it's Beverly, it's not polite to stare. And she said, Dr. Zucker, where's my strawberry? And he looked at her, like, she had actually thought that he took it because he loved it, and she was looking for it on his forehead. No, that's how much he loved it. And he just looked at her, and he just said, you know, Bev, you're a really big girl now. It was someone else's turn for that strawberry. And she was fine with that answer. So it's just one small example to let you know that you could take something which, to somebody, that would have been pretty awful. I mean, I know sometimes how I feel when I have one pimple, you know, right here on the tip of my nose, and everyone's staring at it. Imagine that. But she just showed me it doesn't matter. What you do with it. So she was awesome. I have a poem I want to share with you. And this is just another example of taking a situation and making it positive. This was written by a mother who had a child with Down syndrome, but I think it applies to any situation, any new situation in life. So listen to this. When you're going to have a baby, it's like planning a fabulous vacation trip to Italy. You buy a bunch of guidebooks and make your wonderful plans. The Colosseum, the Michelangelo David, the gondolas in Venice. You may learn some handy phrases in Italian. It's all very exciting. After months of eager anticipation, the day finally arrives. You pack your bags and off you go. Several hours later, the plane lands. The stewardess comes in and says, "Welcome to Holland." "Holland," you say. "What do you mean, Holland?" "I signed up for Italy. I'm supposed to be in Italy. All my life I've dreamed of going to Italy. But there's been a change in flight plan. They've landed in Holland, and there you must stay. The important thing is they haven't taken to a horrible, disgusting, filthy place filled with pestilence, famine, and disease. It's just a different place. So you go out and you buy new guidebooks. And you learn a whole new language. And you'll meet a whole new group of people you never would have met. It's just a different place. It's slower paced than Italy, less flashy than Italy. But after you've been there for a while and you catch your breath, you look around and you begin to notice Holland has windmills. Holland has tulips. Holland even has Rembrandts. But everyone you know is busy coming and going from Italy, and they're all bragging about what a wonderful time they've had there. And for the rest of your life, they will say, yes, that is where I was supposed to go. That's what I promised. And the pain of that will never, ever, ever go away. Because the loss of that dream is a very significant loss. But if you spend your life mourning the fact that you didn't get to Italy, you may never be free enough to enjoy that very special, very lovely things about Holland. It's just true to anything. When first I heard Jacob's diagnosis, I was devastated, to say the least. It was probably the worst 6 months of my life. I thought my life had ended. Every dream had shattered. My first child was going to suffer and was going to die. What could be worse than that? But now, I'm in Holland, and I love it. So, I want to show you a video, because I think to really understand where I'm coming from, you have to meet Jacob. And this video takes you through Jacob's life and introduces you to the charity that we've started. And I can't speak enough about what it says. So I want to introduce you to my family. My baby wasn't born yet, but anyway, I think you'll get the idea. Do you want to come closer? Or, I mean, my, you know, fancy PowerPoint and my... Okay, so...
It's a path we never thought we would ever have to go through. Okay. And I'm so happy we've gone through it, because he's changed us in so many ways.
Turn the light on.
I grew up at 30. You know, I saw the light. I saw the world in a completely new light. Oh, it was amazing. I loved being pregnant with Jacob. It was just the greatest time in my life. I was so excited. I always wanted to be a mother. This won't be here. You know, I'm a teacher. I love kids. I couldn't wait.
Will it be blue? Will it be pink?
It just felt great. I loved everything about being pregnant.
Oh, hi. Here we are, getting ready. First step.
Even the delivery was exciting. There was a lot of fun in the room. And the baby started great. And that monitor that I machined over here. There's a lot of things going on that we didn't expect, but it worked out great.
You know, he had a perfect score on the ABCAR, and he was so beautiful.
He's perfect. Six to 7 weeks, we started talking to people about certain milestones that their children were meeting. Look who's up. Hey, Jacob. What milestones we should be expecting around that time. One of those things was ability to start to hold the head up a little bit, and also tracking. And he wasn't doing any of that.
I would say to my friends and my family, is he supposed to be looking at me now? And they'd all say, no, Ellen, he's just a baby, don't worry. And then he just started to cry, and he cried and cried and cried.
So it became a concern, and we mentioned it to our pediatrician.
And then around two and a half months, we started testing.
Talking about changing your life. She called, and as soon as we heard her voice, we knew that something was wrong.
They just told us he had Canavan disease, and we looked at what's that? You know, this rare disease, we don't know a lot about it.
And then we started asking questions.
Will he eat? No. Will he go to school? No. Will he be able to say mommy? No.
And it was a difficult time, because all the answers came out either no, he's not going to do that, or no, he's not going to be here that long, or no, there's no cure, or I don't know.
Hello.
Hello. Initially, she said that more than likely he won't live to the age of 5, but sometime between the age of 3 to 5, he'll get increasingly sick, and we shouldn't expect him to live beyond that.
I just remember I had to go home and see Jacob, and after knowing that, how could I be the mother, that I want to be? It was very hard.
My first child, my first boy in the family, I mean, it was all the things that come along with that, all the excitement that led up to that.
Of the myelin in your body. That what the myelin is it sends the messages from your brain to the rest of your body. It tells you to walk, it tells you to talk, it tells you to do any, it tells you to move your finger. And Jacob's myelin is deteriorating and it affects everything in his body and will eventually kill him.
He inherits a defective gene from both of us. At the time when Helen and I went for genetic counseling, they could have detected that we were both carriers of this defective gene. That was available at the time in the US, but here in Canada at the time, they did not even ask the question. So we had no idea. You know, it was upsetting. It was definitely upsetting. There was a lot of anger there. What are we gonna do though? I mean, the way I look at things, I'm in the status quo. I've gotta deal with what's in front of me right now.
Where's mommy?
We could have gone in two directions. One direction was to be private and keep the sickness within our immediate family and go through life and deal with it on a very close-knit level. Or we could go public. Well, let's try and find a cure. Let's try and prevent other people from getting the same disease.
So that's how Jacob's Ladder started, because we didn't want anyone else to have to go through what we had gone through. And go through every day.
The other thing that we want to do is we want to fund projects that are geared towards research into neurodegenerative disease.
Not just Canavan disease, but other neurodegenerative diseases, like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, Tay-Sachs. There's just endless. If we can find something in one of the diseases, it may affect all of them.
The technical name for the foundation is called the Canadian Foundation for Control of Neurodegenerative Disease. Well, try and write that on a check. It's a little bit long. So once we had that in place, because that's really the true meaning of it, we said, well, let's try and find something with Jacob's name in it. I mean, really, this is Jacob's legacy. And if we could find something with his name in it, it would be great. The ladder, it's pretty much self-explanatory. I mean, one rung at a time, we're climbing towards a cure, we're climbing towards prevention. It just fit. Jacob's Ladder is a labor of love. Our first fundraiser was the one that Starbucks put on for us back in February of 1998.
They had all the stores on Eglinton participate, and they had a silent auction, a live auction, and within a week they raised $10,000.
It's been a tough year for our family.
$350 twice. So,
we've had movie nights. We have a golf tournament every year. We had a kids' day at the ROM. Toronto doctors, who are very talented, put on a show every year called Life Beat. And for 2 years in a row, they chose Jacob's Ladder as the charity.
We even had four guys who are a bit of adrenaline junkies climb a mountain in Washington, Mount Rainier, and raise $75,000 to support their climb. And they had people climbing stairs at their office building so that the company would match funds. So it's been a lot of fun. The fact that these people are drawn to what we're doing is because of Jacob. It's because we're out there, we're not taking what life has to give, but we're actually taking a step forward and saying, well, let's make good of it. Let's really do something positive with it. And I think people look at that and say, wow, that's kind of neat. Let's become a part of that. And the biggest accomplishment of the foundation so far is the fact that we have been able to get screening available in Ontario at no cost or hassle to at-risk people. That was huge for us. We set out in 1998 with a study at SickKids so that we could determine a carrier rate of the defective gene to prove that, yes, there is enough of a frequency rate here to get that covered for it to be something that we should test for. That was fully funded by Jacob's Ladder. And to have accomplished this in 2.5 years was a real feather in our cap, and it's something that we're tremendously proud of.
How did I describe my son? Loving, sweetest human being in the world, strong. strongest person I know. And he just loves his little life.
Medical life started to get very complicated for Jacob when we got involved with some experimental gene replacement therapy. That was a real challenging time going through the procedure. It was exceptionally challenging because you and I, we go into a doctor's office, they look for a vein to try and take a blood sample. We see the needle coming, we know when it's going to prick a little bit, and then it's over. Jacob was this adorable, chubby little kid. You'd be hard-pressed to find a vein in him.
Hey,
doesn't know what's going on. Why are you hurting me? And all he's doing is screaming, and we can't do anything about it. And this is going on endlessly for 3 months. It's just heartbreaking.
Jacob Schwartz is one of 16 children in North America participating in a precedent-setting study. Researchers here at Yale New Haven Hospital are injecting new genetic material into the brains of these children in an attempt to stop the devastating progress of Canavan disease.
As a result of that trial, that he acquired an infection, had about an hour and a half seizure, and was in the hospital for 3 months. Beyond that, had about 9 different neurosurgeries to make sure that he was stable enough to go home. And it was one of the most challenging times of my life, that's for sure.
For a full year, we didn't know who our Jacob was anymore. And he came back, he always does, somehow, which is miraculous.
He's like pretty much sitting up on his own. Well, he was pushing back, but he was using his arms.
The learning curve is huge and it doesn't stop. I mean, the thing about a neurodegenerative disease, it's progressive. So even though Jacob's maturing and he appears at his happiest he's ever been right now, the disease takes something away from him every year, physically.
During the first year of life, he could lift up his head, he could move his body, he would lay on the bed, and he'd move his arms and move his legs and laugh, and we could feed him, he would nurse, he could drink from a bottle. The second year of life, he would start to choke on his liquids, so we had to move him to really thick food, because he couldn't swallow liquids anymore. He wasn't moving around as much. His head became much more floppy. Around 3, the whole year, he wasn't responsive. We didn't know if he would ever come out of that second seizure. And we were talking about palliative care. We thought that was it. And then he came back again. And this year 4 and the beginning of 5 has just been amazing. He isn't moving his legs or arms that much. But he still laughs, and you look at those eyes and there's so much light behind those eyes.
Our main focus with Jacob has always been that he's happy. After we got out of the hospital, after all the surgeries, after the gene therapy and everything that went with it, Alan and I looked at each other and we said, you know, he's cried more than he ever needed to in a lifetime. And we looked at him and said, he doesn't have to cry anymore. And that was very worried.
I just want to be part of our life.
Thank you, is that funny?
To not be in pain, to enjoy his sister, to enjoy our new baby, to just be with us for as long as he can. And I don't want him to feel pain. When it's time for him to go, he'll go. But I just want his quality of life to be really good.
Jacob is just generally a really happy boy. He loves to be at school. He loves to sing and play and do all the things that little boys love to do.
Hello, Jacob.
Ready to come back up?
Beverly School has been the best thing in Jacob's life in the last 2 years. Without question.
Push with this arm. We have the time and the resources needs for his vision and his hearing and for his body to, the physiotherapy that exercises that we get from our therapists and the different activities that we can really stimulate Jacob with.
He participates in everything and then some.
What would you like to play with now? Would you like to go for a wagon ride? Go, Jacob!
The people at this school are phenomenal facilitators.
Jacob, here we go. In the Snoozeland room.
And the equipment that they have at the school, we couldn't possibly imagine having in our home.
The Snoozeland room is a specially designed room for the students at Beverly that stimulates their senses. And when we take Jacob into the room, what he likes to do is to lie on the vibrating mat. He can feel that all down his body. He likes to look at the lights. We have all sorts of different lights on the walls and fiber optic lights that he can hold and touch.
He goes swimming once or twice a week in an indoor pool. And swimming for Jacob is the best thing there is, because all of a sudden there's no constraints on his limbs. No, I mean, he can flow and the weight's taken off.
I think he feels freedom. As soon as he gets in, he just relaxes. And you can just feel his whole body go, and he just loves it. It's magical for him.
He absolutely loves the school. He goes to school with a smile on his face. He comes off the bus with a smile on his face. He's happier than he's ever been.
These days, almost anything makes Jacob happy. He loves people around him. He loves funny noises. That's my baby.
One of the things that we learned very early was Jacob's response level to music and sound.
When Jacob was 6 months old, I took him to a Kayla class.
That was nice singing, Jacob.
This was in somebody's living room, and it was a group of children, all healthy, and I took Jakey, and he heard her voice, and his eyes lit up, and tried to start to sing along, and he was laughing, and Kayla saw this, and she saw this little boy, and she fell in love with him, he fell in love with her, I fell in love with both of them, and they just had a love affair from then on.
Once upon a time, once upon a time.
And Kayla brought some unbelievable things to the table. She does all sorts of things with herself. She does a trumpet with her mouth. She does all sorts of different kind of noises and sounds that he wouldn't ordinarily hear. And the intricacy of the guitar, he absolutely loved that, to the point where sometimes we would have to pull him out of situations because he was being so vocal and being so responsive, but always in a happy way.
When Jakey was in the hospital for those 2 months, Kayla would come down with her guitar,
and
he wouldn't respond. There was nothing we could do. She would play 3 little notes on that guitar, and he'd just feel that vocal. He knew that she was there.
Music gives Jacob so much that I want to be part of Jacob's life for as long as I possibly can. And as long as Jacob is around, I want to be there for him. And his parents have given me that opportunity to be touched by one soul so much and enlightened by the love that he has to offer and his parents and family have to offer. They truly are a bright light. And that's why you see that light in Jacob's eyes, because it comes from Jeff and Ellen.
The way we stay strong, the way we stay focused, it's as a result of Jacob. He puts a lot of things into perspective for us. And the same with Jacob's ladder.
The foundation is just a huge extension of the love they have to give the community.
Jacob's ladder for us has been a huge source of strength. I look at that and say, well, Ellen and I and the family and the kids are going through, at times, tremendous stress level. There's a lot of pressure on the family unit when things aren't going right. And in the back of everything, we've got Jacob's Ladder, and we have this huge group of volunteers dedicated who literally manufacture time in their day to do the things that they do to make it successful. And then there's people from out of left field who send in a check. You know they're struggling on their own, but they still send in the check. And we look at that and say, wow, I mean, look what's going on at home, but this is really important. And we draw a tremendous amount of energy and strength from the way people give and what they give.
To us, this is Jacob's legacy. This is why Jacob's here, you know, to educate people, to tell them how strong you can be from such a terrible disease.
Such a good boy. A very busy day today.
We've seen the community come together. We've seen our friends and family come together.
I look at Jacob and I say, he's got something to teach the world. And he's teaching us as a family, but he's teaching everybody who touches him that, you know what, there's other things out there, but look at me, look how tough I am, and I still got this amazing giggle from the bottom of my belly. You know, life is good, enjoy it while you're here.
Okay. So, are we all in love now? The best thing about watching this video is I get to realize all the time, I married a really great guy. Like, I fall in love every time I watch the video. It's really nice. I just love those words. Life is short. Enjoy them while we're here. Enjoy life while we're here. We all know this. We all understand this. But then why don't we do it every day? And you know why? Because we're human. We're normal. We make mistakes. We have bad days. And that's okay. I find it's okay to feel like that as long as it's not every single day to be down. And to be down in the dumps and to be angry. So Jacob has really taught me the true meaning of life. Enjoy it while we're here, most of the time. Okay? So I was talking to you about those seven tricks that I've learned, and they're kind of my Bible. I'm going to share them now with you. And, you know, there are those days where you have to be that perfect parent. You have to be that wonderful friend. You have to be great at your job. This is my principal sitting here in the contemporary of it. So you have to be, so how do you do all this and still tend to your own needs and take care of yourself? It's really hard to mix it all together. So the best thing about my little tricks is they're all free. First one is really easy, and a lot of them are common sense, but sometimes you just need to be reminded, and I remind myself daily. And the first thing is just to smile. I mean, it's simple, isn't it? But my grandmother, when she was 94, I used to love to go visit her. She was great. She had wonderful stories. She always told me how gorgeous I was and how, you know, it was a very pleasant experience going to see her. And I said, why are you always so happy? Why are you always smiling? She said, Ellen, no one likes a complainer. And it's so true. And she said, look, you're here, aren't you? So I want to think for a minute. Think about that person that you know that's just negative. Think about how their life is awful and they have nothing good to say. Think about how that person, you know, do you all know someone like that? Okay. So I'm not going to ask you who they are, so that's okay. Think about how they make you feel when, God forbid, something good happens to you. Now, if you could go out with somebody for a night on the town, a wonderful dinner, just a break, have a beautiful evening, is that the person you're going to call first? So if you don't want to call that person, then who would want to call you if you're like that? And I really think of that, so I really try to smile. And some days, it can be pretty forced. But I find that once I start to smile, I start to believe that smile. And the best thing about it is people smile back. it's amazing. Now I know you're all going to see me in Dominion in this big line going, you know, smile, Ellen. Yeah, right. No, but it's true. It's true. Try to smile. It really works. You're smiling now?
No, you're always smiling.
Oh, okay. I'm all right. The second one, and I do this quite often, is to have a pity party. And what I mean by a pity party. And what I mean by a pity party is to call your closest friend and let it all out. Yell, scream, cry, do whatever you have to do to get it off your chest. Now, the important part of this is this person that you call cannot be your mother, okay? It can't be a husband or wife. It can't be a brother or sister. It's something that's really, 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 really disturbing to these people. Pardon? Oh, that's so nice. I didn't even think that's a really nice, but yeah, he's very nice. But any other guesses? Okay, they will.
They're not necessarily going to try to boost you up again. Right. They may commiserate too much with you.
They try to help you. They'll try to solve your problems when you just really want an ear, right? And the biggest part, and this is, I guess, with my family, is they never forgive and they never forget. Never. So I have a little story for you about my aunt. Her son went to Camp Timberlane years ago. And there was a boy in his cabin who made his life miserable. Miserable. So yeah, kids can be cruel. So 30 years later, my aunt has a store. And in comes this striking man into her store. And she looks at him and she says, "Did you go to Camp Timberlane 30 years ago?" He said, "Yes." "Were you in my son's cabin?" "Yes." "Is your name blah blah?" "Yes." "I'd like you to leave my store now, please." I swear. Okay? It's people never forget. That's an extreme. But friends are just an ear. They don't try to solve your problems. They don't judge you. They take this job very seriously. Just make sure when you have a pity party that you call the right person and that you bring lots of Kleenex because you're going to need it. All right. Next one. This is great. And this is a technique that took me a lot of time. And now I'm really, really good at this. And it's called worrying time. Who's a worrier in here? Who spends most of their day worrying? Okay, a lot of us. A lot of us. And I was too and still am. But I've learned how to cope with it, how to deal with it. And what I mean by worrying time is to take 10 minutes every day and worry about anything that's driving you crazy. For me, I go in the shower and I worry. Sometimes I cry, sometimes I get angry, sometimes I'm scrubbing my hair, but I worry about everything I can. Sometimes I have really long showers, you know? But I find that it just, when you get out, okay, if it's something that you can't control, you can't worry about it anymore. Because there's nothing you can do about it. If it's something you can control, you take care of it right then and there. You call that friend, or you go to that store, or you call somebody and you say, "Please help me out of the situation. I need help." But if it's out of your control, you can't worry about it, and you worry about it tomorrow.
But how do you go through
the day? That's great. It comes up because it's going to come up 2 minutes later, 5 minutes later, and you say to yourself, "Heather, I've worried about this now, it's already today. I'm going to worry about it tomorrow." It's valid worry, and it's very upsetting, but I can't do anything about it. So I'm going to worry about it tomorrow. Just make sure that you do worry about it tomorrow, and you keep that appointment. I can't tell you how this trick has worked for me. It's amazing. Now, this can't be done when you've just received devastating news. Okay, you can't go in the shower, worry, and not worry about it anymore. This has to be once you've received something, you've understood it, you've accepted it a little, and then you go into your worrying time. You can't worry about everything all the time. Life is too short. So, Anyway, it works. Next thing. And this is also really hard, especially from people you're closest with. But don't expect things from people. And we all do. When Jeff and I were married, the rabbi took us into his study, and he said, the only way your marriage is going to survive is both of you give 90% and just take 10. And I think that's with everything, every relationship. If you expect from people, what's going to happen? You're going to be disappointed, right? If you don't expect anything, you're pretty much always surprised. I mean, if I, you know, went to work and came home and made dinner and did my job, and I was thinking all day, oh, I hope Jeff comes home with flowers, wouldn't that be nice? He comes home empty-handed, I'm a little disappointed. If I go on with my day and in comes Jeff with that one rose, wow, what a great husband. Or you know what? Do what I do and just buy your own flowers. Just try. Expectations are so dangerous, and we can't stop expecting things from people. Why didn't she call me back? I'm supposed to be invited to that party. I can't believe she didn't invite me to that party. If it's really bothering you or something, call the person and just very nicely just say, ask them if someone lets you down. And 9 times out of 10, if you don't expect anything, you're going to be pleasantly surprised. I mean, when Jacob was in the hospital for 3 months, Eitz Chaim school, I kept getting paychecks. I don't even think you know about this. I kept getting paychecks for 3 months. And I called the school, and I said, why am I getting paychecks? And Rabbi Jacobowitz, who was my boss at the time, said, don't you need the money, Ellen? I mean, it was just amazing. So don't expect things. You get surprised. Okay, next point. This is important, and we don't do enough of it. And it's common knowledge. Me time and having an outlet. Everybody should take at least 10 minutes to themselves every single day. You know, and we all feel guilty. Oh, the kids need me, and work needs me, and my husband needs me, and you are very important, but for 10 minutes, you can take time. Okay, I really think to myself that if I take that 10 minutes, I'm a better mother, I'm a better friend, I'm a better daughter, I'm a better teacher, I'm a better everything. So there's no guilt involved because I think I'm taking my me time for you. And it works somehow. And it doesn't have to be an hour, it doesn't have to be a weekend, it doesn't need to be a week. It needs to be 10 minutes to just shut your door, go for a walk, lock out the world. Take care of yourself, and then you can take care of everyone else around you. So this kind of goes with finding an outlet. And sometimes you can take more than that 10 minutes. Have you ever tried kickboxing? It is the most incredible thing in the world. It's 45 minutes of punching and kicking as hard as you can. I can't tell you how amazing I feel after I've done this. Whatever it is, going for a walk, taking a long bubble bath, get your outlet, get rid of those cobwebs, you know, just to relax yourself so you can think better. When Jacob was in the hospital, I used to jog down for 45 minutes for my turn, my shift. And it was such a sight because I would jog down Avenue Road. Notice I never jogged home, but I always jogged down Avenue Road. And I'd be screaming and crying, and I must have looked really silly. But it didn't matter because when I got there, I could be the mom I needed to be. I could think. I got rid of those cobwebs. So have an outlet. Okay. I know if Jeff and I get into a fight and, you know, passions are going high, you're getting angry, I just stop and I go for a walk. And then I come back and I can deal with things. I can think better. I think, yeah, I was wrong. I was really wrong. You know, for the first 10 blocks, I was right. And for the next 10 blocks, I was wrong. Maybe he did one thing wrong, but I was probably mostly wrong. Okay? So, last point for tonight. And this is probably my favorite one. And it's really helped over the years. And is to make someone else feel special. It's amazing When you're feeling down or low and you do something nice for someone else, you feel better because you've made someone else smile, and someone else just feels great because you thought about them. So what this is one thing I do is I went to dinner one Friday night to my girlfriend Lee's house, and she made this unbelievable challah. It was so good. So she said, I said, teach me how to make this. So I went over and I watched her, because of course there's not a recipe. A little bit of this, a little, and I'm looking at her, give me a break. So I went home, I did a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and it turned out really good. So what I did, and she taught me, when you make it, you can only think of happy thoughts, Ellen. So these challahs are made with true love. Now somehow, I don't know why, I always make four. I keep one for our family, and I always give three away. And it doesn't matter if someone's in need or what, I always give four away. The faces on that Friday afternoon when I bring a hot challah to someone's house right out of my kitchen, it's the best, it's the best. I was asked to speak, and I told this challah story, and there was someone sitting in the audience who had heard some very devastating news. And the girl who asked her to go didn't know if she had done the right thing. So they both left. 3 weeks later, this girl who asked the girl to go came home, and there was a big jar of tomato sauce on her front step and a note that said, I know it's not challah, but I hope I've made your day. So all her troubles went away for 3 hours while she made that sauce. It really, really works. Doesn't have to be challah. All right, so I've given you pretty much most of my little secrets. Just try to have a pity party. Try to smile. Make a challah, you know? Do whatever you need to do. You know, with Jacob, I'm so blessed to have him. You know, in 37 years, I've had over 50 teachers. No one's taught me more about life and learning than this one little boy. I mean, he lacks vision, but look what he sees. Now, he can't talk, but look at the messages that he communicates. It's just from 1 7-year-old boy. So thanks for coming. I hope I've taught you one or two little things, and I'll answer any questions you have, or you can just talk, whatever. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thanks. Thanks. Thank you. Everyone does. Any questions? Anything? Okay, who's that terrible person? I would say I've become more spiritual than religious over the years. I mean, praying. Unfortunately, I never learned Hebrew, so I have to pray in my own way. But I had to find out an understanding of where was Jacob going for me to accept things, and I think I have a really nice understanding of what happens to us, and I think that's really helped me accept, and that's kind of my praying, you know, reading and studying and learning, and Dr. Weiss's book, Many Masters, Many Lives, really helped me to see things.
I'm sure at some point you were angry
at God.
How did you get past that?
Oh my gosh. For 6 months, I hated God. He was diagnosed in August, and I remember having to go to shul for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and I didn't go. No way. You think I'm going to pray? Like, you think so? No way. I was so angry. How could they do this, or whoever do this, to Jacob and us? How could you make a little boy suffer? Like, why make him live like that? And why make us go through this? And just looking at him and learning and watching him has just made me realize, yeah, thank God I have him. And God did a really great thing by teaching me lessons. And as we know, I mean, look at the tsunami. I mean, God does incredible things. But yeah, I hated God for a long time, and now I'm getting a better understanding of why God does things. So you really learn from bad things. Anyone else?
There were 16 families in North America whose children had this.
There were 16 families who did the gene therapy.
Did
it help anything? No. But we're still working on it. Not with Jacob. I won't let him go through that again, but we support it, and hopefully they'll find a cure for something or one of the diseases. Well, now they take, there really is six Jewish diseases, okay? It's predominantly Ashkenazi Jewish descent. There are people that aren't Jewish with it, but there's six of them. Three of them are now funded by OHIP, so are free, that you can do just if you want it. You can go down to SickKids Hospital, to their lab, and ask to be tested for Canavan, Tay-Sachs, and familial dysautonomia, and it's for free. It's nothing. It's one blood sample for all three tests. Or speak to your obstetrician or your doctor.
I was just going to say, how would the average person know that you can ask for that?
One thing Jacob's Ladder does is we're trying to teach all the obstetricians in Toronto that this is available and general people. So they should be, if you're Ashkenazi descent, they should be sending you for the test. Who's your doctor? Or you'll tell me after. But that's funny. That's funny. That's now they would, right? No, this is her third baby. Well, as long as one of you is tested. I mean, if you're a carrier, then of course both of you have to be.
But
I'm sorry. If one is a carrier, then you have to test the other. If one's not a carrier, then there's no reason. No, you both have to be carriers. Yeah.
Is there a way around?
Well, yeah, they can, thank God they can. But when I'm 4 months pregnant, I can have a CVS where they actually take a piece of the placenta and they can tell if the baby's affected or not. Yes.
It is,
but they've been skipping years. Sometimes they're, yeah. Right, they do it in grade 12, right? Grade. But they've been skipping a few years. I don't know if it's funding or what. No. They're not going to all the schools.
Most
of them. I don't. It's usually grade 12 they do it, right? But yes, Canavan is part of that. Yes.
How do you, in terms of time management, like something, you have so much going on in your life, like you're teaching, and then you have a child, like you feel like every child
takes so much out of you. Well, you know the expression, if you want something done, ask a busy person, right? So you just do it. Like there's no, I only teach 4 hours a day. Like I only teach afternoons. I'm with my children in the morning. And when if Jacob gets really sick, everything stops. Life stops. That's it. Like everything. And that's how I just go day by day. You try and you... And some days it's midnight and I still haven't, you know, brushed my hair, and because everything else is more important. Today I did okay, you know. My husband got up with the kids last night. My turn. Okay, thanks everybody. Thank you.